Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Live, and as always, you're invited to join the show. You can easily do that by dialing in here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Ian here in the studio tonight. Jay Noon will be joining me shortly, and we've got some pretty big news to start the show out with here tonight. And that is according to a federal appeals court. They are striking down. A panel of judges unanimously ruled. Three-judge panel in the New Orleans-based appeals court yesterday, struck down a decades-old law that barred users of illegal drugs from possessing firearms, which is a huge blow to U.S. gun regulations after the Supreme Court cleared the way last year for courts to re-examine the nation's gun laws under a new legal standard. And this is a law that has never made any sense at all. The idea that if you have ever been convicted of a drug crime, or you are, you know, admittedly a user of marijuana or something like that, that you are just simply not allowed to defend yourself. You are not allowed to defend your family. For instance, here in New Hampshire, there's the medical marijuana program, and Jay is with us now. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, there's the medical marijuana program that's been in place now for, I think, about 10 years. And whenever you sign up for this medical marijuana, which I have done, even though I'm not allowed to use it under my federal bail conditions, I do qualify for it. When you sign up for it, they give you plenty of warning that by signing up for the medical marijuana federally, you're doing it at the state level, right, from the Department of Health and Human Services here in New Hampshire. But by signing the form saying that you are going to acquire marijuana, you may be putting yourself at risk from federal prosecution if you are also found to have a gun.
I wouldn't even walk into a cannabis store just to look around because they want to scan an ID.
Yeah. No, I tell
that to people all the time. Like, why would you even do that? Now you're in some database somewhere.
I think most people probably do it for the convenience sake. I mean, most people are willing to give up their privacy for convenience.
Most people are willing to give up their rights for convenience. It's true all the time.
Yeah, that's true. I've actually done it once a long time ago. I went down to, I think it was like 2019, when Massachusetts first opened their stores, just to have the experience of being able to walk into a store and purchase marijuana. I was willing to do it, and yes, you're right. They did scan IDs going in there, but it was interesting. Overpriced, but interesting. The thing is, though, Jay, even if you have the medical card, you're not obligated to buy your marijuana from a store. You can still buy the marijuana on the black market. It is legal for you to have and to use medical cannabis for medical purposes. Now, there's certain rules in every state around how or how much cannabis you can have at any given time. I don't think New Hampshire even has home grow yet. I think that's something they're still working on. But what they have been doing is they've been making it easier over time for patients to get access to it. They've been lessening the restrictions over the last 10 years. Now they're allowing patients from other states. So if you have a card from Massachusetts or, you know, somewhere else, you can come in, Arizona, you know, wherever, you can come into New Hampshire and you can go to one of the shops there, or they will recognize the card. So they've been lowering the requirements for qualifications and things like that. But now, according to this federal appeals court, it may be the case that if you are a drug user, you will have your right to bear firearms, to bear arms restored. I want to talk more about it, but let's go to the phones here. We got a caller already on the line here on Free Talk Live with Ian and Jay. Go ahead, caller.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. What's your name?
Hey, my name's Nick. I was just calling about the use of firearms with a medical marijuana license.
Yes, sir.
So the background check process didn't seem to, you know, at the time I was a medical patient. I won't say what state I'm in, but, you know, I went to a gun show and just kind of for, you know, laughs, I went ahead and I applied to get a, you know, a rifle, a long arm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to get it. But, you know, lo and behold, boom, there it is. I got approved for it. So
interesting.
I'm not really sure, how they, you know, what the background check even entails.
Like, I'm pretty sure it's criminal related. So if you don't have, like, a criminal history of, you know, violence or drug use or whatever, then it's probably you're pretty much in the clear. And you were just saying you just had a medical marijuana card, right?
Right. And, you know, I've never had a criminal offense or anything like that. So do you think it's like a HIPAA violation or something along those lines?
It could be that. I mean, it's probably just as simple as the federal government doesn't have database access to all of the states that have a medical marijuana program. They just don't have that access. They don't have that information, so they can't check it. That's my guess.
Gotcha.
But HIPAA could be a factor.
Yeah, and honestly, like, with legalization coming down the pipe, I don't really think that it should restrict gun ownership. I think that's actually pretty ridiculous, especially if you live in a large metropolitan area.
Absolutely.
You know, everything's going down the tubes, and, you know, I just tuned into you guys, so I'm not sure where your affiliations are or where you lean, but, you know, where I'm living now, if you don't have that on you, you know, you're pretty screwed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I can't speak for you, Jay, but I would say most of the hosts of this show are libertarian or would describe themselves as a voluntarist or an anarchist.
Right. I like to call myself a non-archist.
There you go.
I would say we like freedom here. That's what we're into.
I gotcha. You know, man, I'm glad I stumbled on you guys. I was just going through the old transceiver in my car taking a ride.
Oh, where are you calling us from tonight?
I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Oh, you were on broadcast radio in Philadelphia?
AM 740.
I'm gonna make a note of this. AM 740.
So right. Philadelphia, have you taken a ride down Kensington Street any time lately?
I actually work on an ambulance, so yes.
Oh,
perfect. Oh, wow.
So, many of my days.
So I got a question for you.
What's up?
When I've asked this to some guys in Springfield, Massachusetts, and some guys in Manchester, New Hampshire, that are first responders. I was a firefighter actually for 20 years. And our town had a private ambulance service, but I knew a bunch of ambulance guys. First off, thank you for your service. EMTs are very important. And
I appreciate that.
One of the things that I've been at encouraging people to ask first responders is how many of the overdose victims or the people that you're Narcamming are on welfare. So, like, do they have an EBT card in their pocket?
I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm sure it's a high clip. You know, I'm obviously not asking, but that area is well known for, you know, high welfare, high food stamp, CHIP, EBT, whatever it may be. And I think that's pretty ridiculous, man. I think it's nuts that a good percentage of my check is going directly to people who just get it on the card and sell it outside the supermarket for, you know, drug money.
Right. So one of my, you know, theories I've been pushing out there is, you know, Health and Human Services, you know, who provides all the welfare, is fueling the opioid epidemic, is fueling the American drug epidemic. I've got some buddies that work for, I think it's called AMR, American Medical Response, maybe.
Right, yeah, a huge company.
Right, and so Springfield, Massachusetts. And what they told me is that pretty much everyone you're giving Narcan to, or, you know, essentially the dead overdose victims that you're picking up, if they, you know, when they find their wallets or if they find their wallet, sometimes, you know, these people are like, I guess they just get robbed as soon as, you know, they're not in control of themselves by the other junkies. But he basically said that everyone they can identify has an EBT card, which essentially means they're on welfare.
Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely. It's crazy. You hear a lot of word of mouth, especially back during the pandemic. There was a couple people down that neighborhood who got jammed up. because they were literally going around $200. They were buying Social Security cards from the junkies and cashing their COVID checks, which is just ridiculous. There are so many loopholes in this system. It's ridiculous, and it's always the taxpayer that has to end up getting screwed.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the call tonight, man. I definitely appreciate you reaching out. And thanks for the heads up that we're on in Philadelphia. I knew that we had a station. The station you're listening to, by the way, for the record, is WJFP AM 740 out of Chester, Pennsylvania. So thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, awesome, man. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and it's great to be on WJFP. I thought they were only taking the show on weekends, so maybe there's been a programming change. A lot of times I'm not the first person to find out about these things, so it's our listeners that that bring it to our attention. So if you're listening in Philadelphia, welcome to the show. Free Talk Live is an open phones program, meaning that you can call in about anything that you want. And the number here is 603-283-6160. Of course, we always bring things to the table to talk about. And when I saw this headline, this is a big deal that this has happened, because there have been a lot of people in the responsible drug community, okay, which I believe is the bulk of the drug community. You know, you talk, Jay, about junkies, and you'll find junkies in the upper echelons of society as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
The bored housewife sitting at home, she hates her life, her husband's terrible, she's doing some kind of, crack or meth or whatever. It's just that, they get to taken care of a little bit better when
there's
something
definitely
goes wrong, right?
Surgeons. Cardiologist, yeah. Surgeons that use heroin before they go into surgery.
Sure.
Makes their hands steady, is what I was told.
Yeah. So, but anyway, the thing is here, there's a bunch of responsible drug users out there who maybe they come home at the end of the day from a long day at work and they want to roll up a joint, or smoking marijuana, so passe at this point. They pop an edible or whatever, and then they are putting their ability, or were until this court decision, putting their ability to defend their family in jeopardy, because if the federal government found out, they could be prosecuted for that. In fact, this law goes all the way back, according to CNN.com, to 1968. The court, in a three-judge panel, unanimously ruled that the law is unconstitutional, citing the landmark 2022 Supreme Court decision that changes the framework that lower courts must use when analyzing gun restrictions. Quote, in short, our history and tradition may support some limits on an intoxicated person's right to carry a weapon, but it does not justify disarming a sober citizen based exclusively on his past drug usage, according to the circuit judge, Jerry Smith, who was a Reagan appointee on the panel. He said further, quote, nor do more generalized traditions of disarming dangerous persons support this restriction on nonviolent drug users. And that's the key point here. Most drug users are, one, not abusers. They're using it responsibly at times when they're responsibly able to use it, in places where they're responsibly able to use it. And secondly, they're nonviolent. These are people who are not knocking over convenience stores, not sticking knives in people's backs or whatever to try to get the money to buy their next hit of whatever it is that they want to do.
And those kind of activities where pretty much only happen where guns are so heavily regulated that you can't even have one. So there's not an epidemic. So we got a bunch of, we have drug encampments in essentially Nashua and Manchester, New Hampshire, that are pretty clear. In fact, I heard a thing on the radio today, local radio station, how they've had a record amount of deaths for like the first half of the year from overdose in Manchester and in Nashua, the two largest cities in New Hampshire. But what's not happening in Nashua and New Hampshire is you're not having,
armed
robberies. Definitely not like there is Baltimore, New York, Detroit, Chicago, places where you can't have guns,
right?
Because the people just can't defend themselves. Because even the junkies know that when there's an armed society, they have to at least be somewhat polite. They just can't go rob people.
Yeah, and I mean, you may see some desperate people doing some desperate things, but they're not going to last very long.
Right.
I mean, if you keep crawling through people's windows in the middle of the night or day or whatever, looking for some money to buy crack, somebody's going to put a bullet hole in you at some point.
Well, and in New Hampshire, you have a right to defend yourself. Like in
That's
New
correct.
York
you
City,
you don't have to retreat.
And in California, you from what I understand, you can't defend yourself. Just like
you have an obligation to retreat, according to the law, as I understand it, in a lot of places, including I think Massachusetts. Massachusetts as well.
I believe that's an issue in Massachusetts, too.
Even retreating in your own home, as I understand these laws.
Yeah, I know New York City and New Jersey both require that retreat. You have to exit your house if somebody breaks into it in New Jersey. I'm aware of that because I know of a guy who basically stood his ground with a baseball bat, kind of like this, you know, the stick guy did. What are they in the 7-Eleven or whatever in California? Stick man.
Oh yeah, they're going after him.
Yep, they're going after him for, you know, basically serving instant justice, defending
for listeners
himself.
Listeners that don't know that we're talking about, there's a video that I guess went viral within the last couple of weeks where a couple of did you say they were Sikhs?
I think I said stick man.
Oh, okay. Well, one of them, I think, had a turban on, so made me think he might be a Sikh. Anyway, but he did have a big stick, and some guy was in this convenience store with a garbage can, like a huge garbage barrel, just throwing cigarettes into this garbage barrel and just acting like he's just going to come and walk in there and take as many cigarettes as he wants and then walk on out. And supposedly he had a weapon, is what I heard. I didn't see it in the video, but that's what I heard.
I saw the video, and it's not real clear in the video, but the way he was grabbing it, it didn't look like he was grabbing a stick. It definitely looked like he was grabbing some kind of pistol. Because the way
the man with the garbage can.
Yes, the man with the garbage can. Because just the way he was, you know, putting his hand, you know, to his back, it was maybe he was grabbing a baton, you know, because that's got like a 90-degree, you know, handle on it. Mm-hmm. But he definitely was. It was either a baton or a pistol. I'm going to guess pistol.
Even if the dude didn't have a weapon, he was still, in my opinion, the guy in the store is completely within his rights to use violence to stop a lunatic from destroying his store and stealing God knows how many hundreds or thousands of dollars worth of product. And so the man who was a, I presume, store owner or just employee, just starts wailing on this guy with a big 2x4 or something like that. And the man who was robbing the place ends up on the floor crying and begging this guy to stop. And as I understand it, prosecutors are now, I don't know if they brought the charges yet or if they are bringing charges. But yeah, they intend to go after this guy. Because in places like these big cities, you're not allowed to defend yourself. But that's a whole other story about just general self-defense, and we can come back to that and talk about, you know, why it is that if you believe in the right to defend yourself, you shouldn't be in places that don't support it. That's a whole other thing. But I do want to point out, more of this, the details from the story here. So we've got the case that this three-judge panel ruled unanimously to reverse was that the man Patrick Daniels was the defendant, will have his July 2022 conviction under that law that we're talking about where, again, a former drug user cannot bear arms. Daniels had been sentenced to nearly 4 years in prison and 3 years of probation, according to one of the judges in the case. As applied to Daniels, the federal gun law violates the Second Amendment. Daniels had been arrested in April of 2022 after law enforcement officers searched his car during a stop and found marijuana butts and two loaded firearms. The officers did not administer a drug test the night of the stop, but Daniels admitted that he was a frequent user of marijuana. First mistake, okay? The first mistake is admitting anything to the police. If, you know, look, I'm not a lawyer, not giving you legal advice, but if it were me and the police were searching a car, whether they're legally searching it or illegally searching it, and many of them are likely to do it illegally, and if you're on the side of the road, you may not know whether it's legal or illegal. It doesn't matter. If they find something like a marijuana butt and they say, Mr. Daniels, is this your marijuana roach, sir? You have no obligation to answer their question. You do not have to tell them that that is your marijuana roach. You don't have to tell them that you smoked marijuana earlier in the evening or that you have ever consumed marijuana in your life. It doesn't matter if they found the roaches in your ashtray. So circumstantially, sure looks like it might be your roaches, but they still would have to prove it in court if you didn't admit to it.
So they don't have to prove anything in court, and a judge will still find you guilty, like in my wife's case.
That may be true, or the jury may find you guilty anyway, like they did in my case.
But the one thing that you should say, this is not legal advice, but there is some precedent, some ruling, I don't remember exactly what it came out of, that, you know, silence is consent. And there is some ruling where you just can't invoke the Fifth By being silent, you have to actually say, I'm like what I would say, recommend it saying is, I am exercising my right not to incriminate myself. It covers.
You're referring to a Supreme Court case from, I don't know, most of a decade ago, I think, at this point.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That made this bizarre ruling that you cannot simply remain silent, even though you have a right to remain silent, that you have to verbally invoke. And I suppose you could actually use like a pre-written piece of paper. I bet you could probably have, you know, I'm invoking my right to remain silent or whatever. Call my lawyer and put that up on your, the inside of your glass.
There's a bumper sticker here. It says, I do not consent to searches.
Yep.
And I'm exercising my right to remain silent. Maybe there's two bumper stickers. One says the other, and then it says something about call my lawyer, Martin and Hipple, or something, and a phone number.
Yeah, these are all things you could have written down, because it can be tricky to have an interaction with a police officer.
Sure, it's scary for most people.
It's very intimidating. The man's got a gun. In many cases, his hand is on the gun. He may have even drawn the gun in certain circumstances. And so it can be very, very scary. They're trained to intimidate you. They're trained to make you feel... At the same time you're intimidated, they're also trained to try to coax information out of you. So they want you to kind of do what a human being is likely to do, which is to say, have a conversation with somebody. When someone who's another person looks at you and says something to you, it is your natural inclination, most people's, to say something back. Whatever that person is saying to you, you just want to say something back. It's just what human beings do. So you have to go against that when you're in a police encounter. You have to remember some basics of how to handle an encounter like this. And one of the basics, again, not legal advice, just my personal experience and, you know, what I would do in these circumstances, is to not answer any of their questions. And as Jay pointed out, you have to assert yourself in a certain way. And a good way to do that, I like what you said, Jay, but I also like a simple statement of, I don't answer questions. And then if they say something else to you, whether it sounds like a question or not, you can say the same thing back. I don't answer questions. And that is you essentially saying that you are going to be remaining silent. And you're also letting them know that if they want to conduct an investigation, they're not going to get anywhere with your help. You're not going to give them anything to assist them in their investigation. And that is what they're doing. When they have you on the side of the road, even if it was just for some kind of, your license plate light is out, or, your headlight was out, that's the reason we pulled you over. You better believe that most of those cops are looking for another reason to ticket you, because they want to get their departmental average up. And, you know, get a bonus or whatever it is. And they want many of them want to put you in handcuffs. They just want to. Some of them are into it. You cannot trust these people. They are not your friends. We got more coming up here. The number is 603-283-6160. It is Free Talk Live.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. Iran has agreed to release 4 jailed Americans and place them under house arrest with the intention of allowing them to travel to the United States in the coming weeks. following a month-long diplomatic push by the Biden administration. That's according to a statement from the family's lawyer. At least 36 people have been killed by devastating wildfires on the island of Maui in Hawaii. Hawaii resident Jordan Sarabe, who lost his home to the flames, describes his experience escaping the destruction.
I had to drive through flames. You know, there was a van and a house already on fire. The smoke was going over the road. Literally don't know what's on the other side of me. And just hoping and praying I don't hit anyone. I don't hit a car and get stuck. The van next to me doesn't explode.
That audio courtesy of Fox News, FEMA and the Red Cross now stepping in to help people who lost their homes. Tim Berg, USA News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay Heating Pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay Heating Pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com, or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join the show. Here are the numbers, 603-283-6160. We're talking about a pretty big decision by a federal appeals court striking down the 1968 law that prohibits people who have had drugs or have drugs from being gun owners. And I think this is great news for the responsible drug users in the United States, which are the vast majority of them. I want to continue with that discussion here, and then coming up, you got a letter from DCYF, the so-called Department of Children, Youth, and Families, I think is what it stands for. Oops, sorry, Jay.
It's a division, not a department. So, division.
Let's get into that coming up here in a little bit. But also, the show here is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency. It's designed for use to be used for spending, which most cryptos are just designed to do some sort of techno wizardry. Dash focuses in on being actually useful. And one of the things they did, they were the first crypto project. And they were actually, they were the first one ever. Obviously, that was Bitcoin. They were the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization. But they were one of the first cryptocurrencies, like one of the first 15, I think, cryptos that ever came out. So they go way back. And they did the DAO first. And their decentralized autonomous organization to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. The way it works is every month, 10% of the mining rewards from Dash's miners go towards a treasury. And anybody that has one Dash can put forward a proposal for the Dash masternodes to vote on. Those masternodes vet those proposals, they decide which ones move forward, and then they receive funding automatically if they're voted in by the Treasury. In fact, that's how we got this sponsorship. And nowadays, DAOs are plentiful. They're all over the crypto world. Dash paved the way by doing it first nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies. It's widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get. It's easy to use Dash. You can start by learning more at Dash.org. And thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. You can visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That is Dash.org. We can talk more about this appeals court ruling striking down the federal law prohibiting people who use drugs from owning guns. But let's talk to Sheriff David Hathaway on our SIP line, which you can connect to over at sip.freetalklive.com. Normally people call on the regular phone. This usually sounds better because it's an internet call. David, you're on Free Talk Live, calling us from Santa Cruz County, the border county, one of them in Arizona. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Ian and Jay. Yeah, good talking to you guys. Just want to make a couple comments. First on the consent thing. Like here at the Border Patrol checkpoints in Arizona and cops in general, they're real tricky on the consent thing where they will...
To clarify, are you talking about the internal checkpoints?
Yeah, the internal checkpoints that are well within the United States. It will ostensibly sound like they're just being friendly and asking for your assistance, but they'll say things like, hey, buddy, would you mind popping the trunk for me? Just that little silver button there. Can you just hit that and pop the trunk for me?
Would you mind? That sounds like they're asking for your consent.
Right. And then it is actually a question. And they say, hey, buddy, could you pass me the keys there? Or can you just step out now? Can you go around there and just open the trunk for the keys for me? You know, or can you just reach around in the back seat and just pull that handle there to open the back door for me? And it's just kind of like, can you do me a favor? But it is actually in the form of a question, and they are actually seeking consent. So
Sneaky.
That's one of the common ones I see.
Sneaky.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jay.
I had a DOT cop years ago when I was hauling hay, and he's like, hey, can you step out of the truck? I'm like, are you asking me to do something? He goes, yeah, I just asked you to do something. I says, okay, I don't work for free. I want $50,000 an hour to work for you, and since you work for the government, I don't trust you. I need to get paid up front, cash. And he goes, you can't do that. I'm like, oh, you can hold me in involuntary servitude. You can order me to do something without paying me.
Nice.
He says, you want to go down that road? Let's do it. And he's like, just get out of here.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing, Jay, on that thing, the law about that they struck down, it says, you know, if you use illegal drugs, you can't own a firearm. But it's kind of – it's really weird and hypocritical because let's talk about opiates. You know, there's a whole bunch of legal opiates that have the same ingredient in it, like codeine and Demerol and oxycodone. And there's, you know, morphine's legal. There's fentanyl patches that are actually legal and prescribed. But then there's the illegal drugs that have the same substance. They're still opiates, like, you know heroin or raw opium. So it's just kind of weird that you could have the same substance in your body, but if it's defined as illegal. And I was just looking at that ruling when you were talking about it, and I guess at this point they're kind of constraining it to marijuana, you know.
Oh, are they?
At least that seemed the way the holding was in that case. It was particular to...
Oh, just because the case specifically had to do with marijuana?
But it did say, you know, striking down that part of that law that said illegal drug usage, you know, can't disqualify you from owning a gun. But then it is kind of weird that some things can be illegal.
Well, at the very least, this would open the door for a defendant who was arrested for cocaine could use the same argument and may indeed have success. But I'm curious, to come back to the checkpoint trickery that you're talking about, these are the same checkpoints where they will ask people if they are a U.S. citizen, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And
that's a vague question.
The reason for those checkpoints, but they'll do other things too, like it's been the fraud with the dog usage has been proven over and over, like they've had body camera video showing the dog handler making the dog alert
They're signaling.
Spot on the car.
Yeah, they're quietly signaling to the dog to false alert to give an excuse to conduct a search. And that's what they can do if they don't get the driver's consent with the tricky questions that you're talking about.
And then they can't put the dog on the witness stand and say, articulate for us what it was that made you alert on that spot. Now, if it's a human being, the officer has to say, well, the person looked nervous or he was sweating or he made conflicting statements. They have to, like, compile a list of things to make it be like why you had your probable cause, why you're suspicious. But of course, speaking of Border Patrol, they don't even need probable cause. There's three Supreme Court cases that say Border Patrol has what they call extended border search authority within 100 miles of the U.S. border, and yet two-thirds of the American population, over 200 million people, live.
Well, hold on. If that's the case, David, then why are they trying to get people to consent to the search if they can just search anyway?
The U.S. Attorney's Office likes it better if they can get consent. Mm-hmm. There still are cases that get thrown out. For example, a tractor-trailer driver that has a load of tomatoes, but there's some cocaine hidden in there. He can make the argument that he didn't know that it was loaded at a warehouse, and mm-hmm. he just came with the tractor and hit and hooked up to the trailer part that had a reefer unit on it. So they do get thrown out sometimes. But if they can go down this path of suspicion or consent, then the U.S. attorneys, like that. It makes it look like the person was more involved with giving permission.
Do you have to go through these on a regular basis when you're traveling around Santa Cruz County?
Yeah, I did. I did today. There's two of them here in Santa Cruz County. And
are they permanent or they move around?
They're permanent. They used to be when I was a teenager. By Supreme Court ruling, they had to be temporary. So they would take them up and take them down and move them to different places. But now they're permanent. And they have permanent structures. And like I said, the Supreme Court has ruled that the Border Patrol can search without probable cause within 100 miles of the U.S. border, which includes cities like New York, Los Angeles, Seattle,
ridiculous.
San Francisco, Miami. So
what do you say? I mean, you gave us a good example of how these officers from the Border Patrol are saying things like, hey, can you just open up the trunk for me? And trying to get people to consent to it. What would you say when they hit you with a question like that? And have they hit you with that question?
Yeah, what you don't want to do is start arguing constitutional law with them. Mm-hmm. Just keep it real simple and have your statement. It's just pretty much like what Jay was saying. I say, I do not consent to any searches. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I say, I have the right to remain silent. But I first get it out that I don't consent to any searches. And then I make it clear I'm not going to make any statements. And I also have, there's a famous libertarian gun rights attorney that lives in this state, and I have his cell number on my phone, and he encourages people to put his cell phone number on their phone. And I say, if they really persist and get ugly, I say I need to call my attorney before I make any statements if it's really getting uncomfortable. And then he will always say, it even says on his white website, never make a statement to the police. But I just say, I need, if it got really bad, I've done that before, say I need to call my attorney. And then mm-hmm. once you say that, that's like the silver bullet they're taught in all their law enforcement academies. Once somebody requests an attorney, you have to stop. They're supposed to stop when you say you don't want to talk, But I say those two things. I do not consent to any searches. Even if they're just saying, hey, buddy, can you pop the trunk for me? I say I do not consent to any searches. And I have that ready in my mind before mm-hmm. I roll up, so I don't have to invent the verbiage at the last minute. And then if they persist, I say I'm not going to make any statements.
I think those are good suggestions for people out there. And again, a lot of people aren't encountering these things on a regular basis in some parts of the country. But, if you're going traveling and you're going down to the south, this can also happen near the Canadian border as well. But you come across one of these checkpoints. Now you know a little bit more about what you can do.
There's a checkpoint, White River Junction, Vermont, which is a border town with New Hampshire. It's almost 100 miles south of the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
Been there for years. When I was hauling hay, I used to go through it all the time.
This is not on 91. It's somewhere in town.
This is on 91.
I've been through that 91 through White River many times and not run into it.
So there's a rest
temporary?
Well, maybe. So there's a rest area just south mm-hmm. of the 89 and 91 interchange. And it's I can't remember what the exit number is, but it's just south of the White River Junction exit. So if you missed the exit for White River Junction, the next thing is this rest area.
Okay.
And they set up Border Patrol there. They used to set it up a lot. I haven't seen it in, you know, a couple of years. I don't go up there much, but I used to travel through there like 3 times a week, and it was set up a lot. And when they would ask me if I'm a U.S. citizen, I would say, what definition of U.S. citizen are you using? Or what is your definition of U.S. citizen? And there's a court ruling. It's if you were to internet search definition U.S. citizen Hooven Allen versus, I can't remember, but it's from like the 50s. And it gives three different definitions of a U.S. citizen. Well, these Border Patrol guys,
they don't know what they're talking about.
They're like, well, this is United States right here. I'm like, oh, you mean to tell me that this this piece of dirt we're standing on called, that we call Vermont, is the United States? Is that what your definition of? Because, you know, the IRS says the United States is District of Columbia, territories and possessions, for example.
Mm.
And so, but yeah, a lot of times you just ask them, because it's a vague question. United States actually has three different definitions according to the Supreme Court.
Do you remember what they are?
So I'll say them roughly, but it is can be the District of Columbia, which I believe is the second definition. The first definition, I believe, is a state within the Union of States known as the United States. And I don't remember what the third one is, similar to the first one. Anyways, it's, you know, it's legalese, you know, kind of stuff. But but the Border Patrol guys don't know the actual definition of
course not.
The United States.
They're just following orders.
In fact, in New Hampshire, it's a RSA 21, Section 4, I believe it is, statutory code, or maybe it's RSA 4, Section 21. I could have that backwards. But state is defined as United States, territory, District of Columbia, territories, and possessions. That's basically what the state of New Hampshire statutory construction manual defines the word state as. So when you get a ticket or you get a summons or you're charged with child endangerment, like my wife was, it says state versus, you know, Shallon Noon or whatever, you know, the whoever they're writing a ticket to or the claim against. And the state is defined as District of Columbia, territories and possession. And, you know, so it's like that's the next thing I want to get into with when the cops on the stand on our next go around and our trial de novo will go through. But I did have a comment about, and Sheriff, if you could comment on this. So when a woman is given birth in New Hampshire, they will sometimes test them for THC. So, for example, we were concerned about COVID, and we had talked with a doctor, a couple of doctors about this, Dr. Judy Mikovits being one in particular. In fact, there's a show where Judy and I talked about this on freedomsphoenix.com. And we were concerned about not so much COVID, but, you know, the shed of the COVID-19 vaccine and the spike proteins and all that stuff. And, you know, miscarriages have sort of skyrocketed, you know, during this time. And we wanted to protect ourselves. So one of the things we did was we used ivermectin paste and mixed it with cannabis oil. And we rubbed it on my wife a certain amount. And the ivermectin paste was literally horse warmer. And so it's a topical, and it'll get a little bit of that ivermectin in there. And, well, we had a super healthy baby. But you can test positive for THC when you do that.
Really?
So the interesting thing is they'll want to give you a hard time, you know, whatever, you know, do some stuff if you test positive for THC. In fact, in Alabama, they put women in prison if they test positive for THC when they're giving birth. There's a story about a girl who this happened to that was using CBD oil. And but what they will do is they will prescribe you an opiate narcotic for pain from the pregnancy. So they're like, oh, no, the THC is horrible. We're going to, you know, fine you for that. But here's this opiate. Take this. And that's
some hydrocodone.
I can't remember which pill it was, but it's an opiate. And they're like, oh, would you like some? And I don't remember what this thing was called, but they were like just pushing it on my wife in the hospital. And my wife's like, I don't want an opiate. What's wrong with you? I'll sit here in pain. Leave me alone. Mm. Yeah. So it's just, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah. And these, Jay, these CPS things or Department of Children and Family Services, they're so vague that they can kind of, they have so much power, they don't even need a search warrant. They can go in and look at your kid's teeth and say, oh, their baby teeth have cavities in them and threaten to take your kids away from you. And it's for for that very reason that we had our last seven children at home, home births, just me and my wife. Our first two of the nine were at hospitals, and we had such a bad experience. Like, there's this now defensive medicine where they do all this weird stuff to you. They put silver nitrate drops in your kid's eyes that immediately make their eyes swell up, and it's more in case the mom had, and it's universal, in case the mom has gonorrhea, and you're supposedly not able to opt out. And they say, well, it's minimally intrusive, so there's even been court rulings to say that hospitals have been sued that didn't do that, so they kind of automatically do that now. And the automatic episiotomy that they do, just this whole defensive medicine. We did everything we could think of, everything in the book, so you can't sue us. Even though an episiotomy causes, the level of wounds that the vaginal tears that a woman can get are from a 1 to a 5. And the natural tearing, if there's any, is like a level 2 on average. But episiotomy is automatically up to a level 5. But they're doing that to supposedly protect the mother and ease the baby coming out. But it's just where they – I don't want to get too graphic about it, but it's usually with scissors. They snip the tissue between the vagina and the anus, and that's called an episiotomy, and they kind of automatically do that. They did that to my wife, and it's very painful. You have to recover. They do the stitches and all that kind of stuff, and we even told them on the second one, we do not want you to do this, and we don't want you to do the silver nitrate in the baby's eyes, and they did it anyway.
Oh,
so
my God.
After that, we did all the last seven births at home, and it was a pain to get birth certificates, and they wanted us to get the vaccinations, which we didn't. But, like Jay, you're right. I mean, it's just those people have unbelievable power to go in and just say, we're going to take your kids from you because you didn't change the diaper often enough or something.
It's crazy. And we could talk more about that coming up here. David, great information on how to handle police encounters. And just to be clear, what we were talking about a few moments ago with the Border Patrol also can apply when it comes to local cops. I mean, there's a lot of trickiness that they try to pull to try to get people to consent to a search. One of the lines that I've heard so many times, not in person, but on, you know, videos when people are recording their encounters, is I'm going to have to ask you to open the trunk or whatever. That way it's not, they're not like asking you for a favor. That's more of a, it sounds like an order, but it's actually they're just asking. He's saying I'm going to have to ask because they don't have any actual probable cause, so he has to ask in order to have you obey him and just allow him to search. So just be very, very cautious. And again, you know, don't agree to anything that these people want and ask, you know, if you want, you can ask questions to clarify as well. But again, speaking to the police tends to increase your risk. But if a cop says, you know, can you do me a favor and open the trunk? You can say, well, are you just asking? And just to clarify is whether or not he's giving you an order or he's asking. And that's another option. Thank you, David, for the call tonight. I do appreciate it. That's David Hathaway. He is the sheriff down there at the border county of Santa Cruz County in Arizona. Always an interesting call by a guy who knows the business. And if you want to comment, you're welcome to join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. But again, anytime you are speaking to the police, you are in jeopardy. So if you're going to speak to them, make sure it is always in the form of a question. That's why I say if you want to ask a question to clarify, that usually is okay, but again, just not allowing them to get you to talk is really important.
My favorite question for the cops is, do you believe, just because I'm on this land that we call New Hampshire, or wherever you are, that the New Hampshire Code and Constitution apply to me?
Did they ever answer it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it does, is what they say. Okay, what evidence do you rely on? So that's a really good setup question for court. The other thing, too, is recording them is really powerful.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad you got to that.
And so you record them and ask them questions, and this recording might be heard by the jury. Will quite likely be heard by the jury if they don't, you know, delete it on you, which I've had my recordings deleted. I've had videos deleted a few times. I've had one time in Vermont, I had two recorders going, and he deleted one, and then the other one was above the visor of the truck.
He didn't know about it.
And he didn't know about it, and I played that one for the judge, and the judge flipped out on this cop. This was like in 2001. And I was 21 or 22 years old, and he just, for 15 minutes, screamed at this cop, and he just missed it. It was, and I got pulled over for not having a DOT number on the side of my truck.
Dash cams are cheap these days. I mean, 2001, they were probably a little pricey, but nowadays, I think you can get them for like $50 to $100.
It was I had
HD.
I had bought like a 10-pack of micro cassette recorders.
Oh, wow.
You know, for
this
like...
This was back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Okay, yeah.
So I did it, you know?
Yeah.
So I had a couple, and I happened to have like three or four of these in my truck, and they were just ready to go, brand new, batteries in them. I just bought them like a couple weeks ago, and and at the time I had like four trucks, so I wanted to have one in each truck, you know, because it's hard moving all your stuff around from truck to truck, and you know, but yeah, dash cams are really awesome, and almost everybody's got a dash cam now because they're so inexpensive.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's almost everybody, but there's certainly no excuse if it's something that you think is a valuable idea. And I think it is. It's a good idea not just for police encounters, but just to have evidence of anything else that could happen while you're out on the road.
When I say everybody, just about anyone's car I get into and go somewhere with, all my friends,
okay, good.
They'll have dash cams.
I'm really glad to hear that. Let's continue here. Major Payne is on the line in Michigan. Go ahead, Major.
Yeah, I've got a couple threes for you. Number one, you were talking about the cops, and that reminded me of even as a little kid, they were trying to brainwash us because the crossing guards that led us across to the stoplights going to school in our little yellow duckling suits, right? They all had police looking hats on and police looking vests on, and we were taught to trust these people from 5 years old.
Oh, yeah.
By the video of it all, right?
Sure. Well, then they bring Officer Friendly into the elementary school and, you know, propagandize you that you should trust the police, and anytime you need help, you always can go to the police and they'll keep
you safe.
Sounds
like cult grooming.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I remember one time when my kid was in, like, fifth or sixth grade, and old Officer Friendly coming, and he lays out, you know, a marijuana joint and a pipe and whatnot. And then he lays out a couple of pack of zigzag papers, and he looks at the kids, and he says, "Do your parents have any of these laying around?"
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's literally trying to get kids to unawares snitch on their parents. That's not what they're intending to do. It's not what the kids are intending to do, but that's what they will do because they think they can trust the police officer.
Another danger of public schooling.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great point, Jay. Get your kids out of these government schools as soon as possible. Thank you for the call tonight, Major. I do appreciate it. Coming up, we'll talk about your DCYF situation. There's not much more to say on this news story about the overturning of the law that prohibits people from having guns and being drug users. It does say here that those in the Fifth Circuit, which was the Circuit Court of Appeals in this case, covering Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi, who have been convicted under this law, can now seek to challenge their convictions and possibly have them overturned, possibly get released from prison if they're still there. So that's a little bit of good news. We got hour two coming up.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to mysolarbackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's mysolarbackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at mysolarbackup.com.
At Social Security, we are always thinking of ways to save you time and make things easier. That's why we created My Social Security. Opening a My Social Security account gives you secure access to your personal record and interactive tools tailored for you. You can see if you are eligible to receive benefits, view spousal benefit estimates, and compare retirement benefit estimates at different ages or dates when you want to start receiving benefits. Already receiving benefits? Use your account to change your address, set up or change direct deposit, get a proof of income letter, and more. In most states, you can also request a replacement Social Security card. Save time. Go online. Open a My Social Security account at ssa.gov/myaccount. Social Security. Securing today and tomorrow.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.